leadership structures. And that leads us on to asking the question, or rather thinking about what Audre Lorde, the well-known feminist writer, what she wrote when she said that the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. And so for me, elections are those tools. The way that the current system is set up in the 67 territories and the political institutions, the way that they have not only been manipulated and dominated by Fatah and by PA institutions, they've also had a massive amount of foreign involvement, donor involvement. And I think inevitably that means that having a huge change in the status quo, a huge revamp of the leadership, of the Palestinian leadership, is not possible under those conditions. And especially because those institutions are not representative and don't claim to be representative of all the Palestinian people in all of their geographic fragments. So I think these institutions, these processes, whilst the excitement for them is understandable in the context of a people that have been denied democracy and democratic practice for so long, in the long run, I think they have limited, as you said, limited gains and limited potential in terms of achieving liberation. Fadi, I think we're going to end it there. This has been a really great conversation, and thank you so much for asking me that final question. We hope to have you on Rethinking Palestine again very soon.
Thank you, Yara. It's always a pleasure to connect and discuss these important topics with you.
Thank you for listening to Rethinking Palestine. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. For more policy analysis and to donate to support our work, please visit our website, www.al-shabaka.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
من مرة وأطمن جاي اللي جاي واللي حر وأطمن جاي اللي جاي واللي حر أنا 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 صحراوي أنا 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 صحراوية أنا صحراوية أنا صحراوية
I'm Aida Musliman, an MK Palestinian woman, a feminist, mother of two daughters, and a grandmother of two wonderful twins.
شو القصة؟ What's the story?
The story is all about an apartheid regime. Yes, an apartheid regime in the country or state that is known as the only democracy in the Middle East. There are 500,000 Israeli settlers sitting on Palestinian territory in the occupied territories, and there are more than 3 million Palestinians, at least in the West Bank. But the two different groups of people are living under the authority of Israel, obeying two different legal systems. If this is not apartheid, then what is apartheid? Every policy that is developed by the Israeli occupation in the West Bank or on Gaza, you take into consideration giving superiority for the settlers. The new thing that we are trying to explain here is that these practices and policies and laws are also evolving and existing inside Israel when we are talking about us, the Palestinian citizens of Israel. The definition of apartheid is having two groups of people or two ethnicities, two nationalities, under the jurisdiction of one state and still do not have equal rights or go by different laws. The law of citizenship that just passed in the Knesset, this law says very clearly that people who are married to Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza or any Palestinian, whoever, or Jordanian, Iraqi, and Lebanese, Syrian, which are defined as enemy countries. If I'm a citizen and I'm married to someone like this, I'm not able to, first of all, he will never get residency in Israel. And second, he will not even dream about getting citizenship in Israel. We are not equal in that situation to the Jewish citizens who are allowed to give their citizenship to their spouses. This is a law that is discriminating against me and my people, although we are citizens. Another law that is that established, in my opinion, the basics for an apartheid regime is the Jewish nation state law. The Jewish nation state law says very clearly or define whose this state is. We are not mentioned, we are the absentees in that law. They forgot that they have 20% of the citizens of Israel are Palestinians. So when you go and check what it says, who are the citizens of this state, or this state belonged to whom? It belonged to the Jewish people. We are denied this equal access to citizenship. I know it sounds very strange and awkward that an MK, a member of Knesset who was elected, who not only votes for the Knesset, but also representing my own people in, and other democratic forces in the Knesset, is saying this. Apartheid is much deeper than giving you the opportunity in the election day to go to the ballots and to vote. When you are denied the right of ownership over the state and being an equal partner of deciding the identity, the regime, the way and the policies this state is going by, then you are not an equal citizen. Yes, I am. I know. I'm aware that even if I'm a member of the Knesset, I'm denied the right to be an equal citizen. I'm fighting this approach. I'm going to the Knesset in order to change the situation. Some people think that having some Arabs in the government these days is giving the right to influence. I don't think so, because these practices of apartheid has developed in order to keep supremacy of the Jewish people in this country. Without changing this situation, without stopping the occupation, without changing the definition of the state of Israel, giving the opportunity to all the citizens of the state to be equal citizens and to have the ownership of the state and making this state for the whole of its citizens, we will continue to live in this situation. Okay, I managed to legislate some laws. I managed to put pressure on government to change things relating to women's rights, to relating to health issues, relating to employment, etc. I don't want to struggle to change things. I want to decide things. I want to be able to influence the decisions ahead and not only to fight the implications of these policies.
My name is Adan Al-Hajouj. I am a Palestinian Bedouin living in Al-Naqab. I decided to take a gap year and volunteer in my community, give back to the community that made me the woman I am today. I'm doing this by first raising awareness of what is going on here, speaking up about the issues that the Bedouin community is facing, and also spending a lot of my time volunteering with children.
What's the story?
The story is that the Israeli government is confiscating land from its indigenous citizens who are the Bedouin community. This all started when Al-Turshan, the people living in Sa'wa, stood up for their right to protest against the confiscation of their land. Sa'wa is a recognized village, yet they haven't had funding from the government to build a playground for the children to play in, to build and renovate schools. They haven't had anything from the government. The Bedouin community in Naqab stood up in solidarity with them, protested with them, and we have been doing this for the past week nonstop, and we will not stop doing it. The plan of the Israeli government has been the same since 1948. It has been the same since the Palestinian Nakba, and it will continue being the same unless we stop it. All Bedouins in the Naqab are treated like second-class citizens in Israel. On paper, we have the same rights and we have the same everything as its Jewish citizens, but realistically, we get treated with extreme racism and discrimination and violence, physical and verbal, on a daily basis. The biggest issue for me and for all Bedouin in Al-Naqab is the land. We, the Bedouins, make up 30% of the people living in Al-Naqab, yet we live on 3% of the land. And this 3% is continuously becoming smaller and smaller as the Israeli government is trying to confiscate more and more of this land. We have generations of history and stories on this land that cannot be made up. We have ownership over this land that is not being recognized, and that's what we want. We want recognition over our land, recognition over Al-Naqab for its indigenous owners, the Bedouins. This week was a roller coaster with many highs and many lows. At my lows, I felt devastated and defeated. This was when I saw our elderly get shot by rubber bullets, our children crying and having trauma once they see their fathers, their siblings, their sisters, their mothers getting arrested by the Israeli government and police. And at the same time, I feel extreme joy and extreme pride towards my community, because for the first time in a long time, we have stood up in solidarity for the fight for our land, for our ownership, and we have done this hand in hand, and we have stayed resistance despite the violence and backlash we are facing. I'm proud to say we are going to continue this resistance until our land is ours.
Warning, this episode contains violence against children. Imagine yourself at 13 years of age. What were you doing? Playing outside on a sunny afternoon? Going to school? Getting sweets with your friends? This is the childhood that maybe most of us had, or at least should have had. In Palestine, however, childhoods are not so easy and not so carefree. This is the story of Ahmed Manasra, a 13-year-old boy from Jerusalem, Palestine, who has spent one-third of his life in an Israeli prison cell, often confined to solitary confinement, and how the Israeli justice system has systematically worked against him to deprive him of his childhood. Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm Deanna Butu. Today we speak to the mother of Ahmed Manasra, Maysoon Manasra, as she recounts the day her boy was taken from her and what his childhood has been like ever since. On October 12, 2015, 13-year-old Ahmed Manasra and his 15-year-old cousin Hassan were attacked by a mob of Israelis after claims that Hassan Ahmed had attacked an Israeli settler. Hassan was shot by an Israeli guard and was killed immediately. Ahmed, however, was attacked by a mob of settlers. The settlers hit him over the head with a metal rod and ran him over with a car. A harrowing video emerged that day. In it, we see a scared Ahmed lying on the ground with blood streaming from the back of his head. His legs are in an awkward position, seemingly broken, and an Israeli settler is standing above him and cursing at him in Arabic and in Hebrew. Quote, "Die, you son of a whore. Die," unquote, the settler says. Maysoon found out only when the Israeli police had stormed her house about Ahmed's attack. She was in the kitchen and heard the screams of her nieces and nephews. Ahmed was taken into Israeli custody and taken to hospital, where his interrogation began.
They took Ahmed to the hospital. They would not allow us to visit him or see him. He was alone and afraid. Ahmed woke up and found himself in the hospital with a broken skull. He was already injured and they kept beating him. In the hospital, they would make him talk on the phone and confess things he did not do. Ahmed's hands and feet were tied to the bed. They would put food in front of him and take pictures of the food to show they were feeding him, but they wouldn't actually let him eat. Our lawyer would bring him pudding to eat and feed him. His jaw was broken. The Israelis would give him food just to stare at.
Later, video emerged of Israeli police interrogating Ahmed, attempting to force a confession. The video shows Ahmed screaming in desperation, quote, "I do not remember. I do not remember. Have I gone mad? Get a doctor and let him open up my skull to show that I do not remember," unquote. Ahmed endured psychological abuse and physical torture. His mental health has deteriorated over time, as he's been placed in solitary confinement and moved from prison to prison from the age of 13 to the present day. Despite not having participated in the attack, which the courts have acknowledged, Manasra was charged with attempted murder. Under Israeli law, minors under the age of 14 cannot be sentenced to prison for criminal offenses. But this is Israel, where the law does not matter. Israel decided to wait until Ahmed was 14 years old before sentencing him. Israel has since amended its laws to allow children to be sentenced to long prison terms. Ahmed was initially sentenced to 12 years in prison, but his sentence was later reduced to 9.5 years, and his family was forced to pay a large sum of money, some 47,000 shekels, the equivalent of $15,000. Today, Ahmed is 20 years old, and he has lived one-third of his life behind bars. At every step, Israeli officials have made it clear that they want to make an example out of Ahmed. They changed the laws to allow for children to be sentenced to prison for long periods. They changed the parole rules so that he cannot be released early. They placed him in solitary confinement for months on end, and even went so far as to deny him the ability to have his tawjihi, his matriculation results, registered in the school system.
He took the tawjihi and he was supposed to pass. We applied for him to take it. They refused to let him because they said he was underage. We were on them trying to let us register, but they kept refusing, saying he was too young, he was too young. Ahmed was exhausted from the whole situation.
Maysoon tells me that her son is not well. She tells me that her son needs treatment as his mental health has deteriorated over time.
He is a fighter despite his situation he is in. He hasn't been able to live his life. And now my son is talking to me about death. He doesn't have a life. It's Ramadan and he doesn't want to fast. He says fasting is a festive time with your loved ones. Why should I fast? He says. Ahmed has no will to do anything, even walk outside. I stay sleeping, Ahmed tells me. They give me medicine to sleep, and I stay sleeping and crying.
Overnight, Ahmed's world was turned upside down. In one day, he witnessed his cousin's murder. He was attacked by Israeli settlers, run over by a car, arrested, shackled to a bed, tortured, and interrogated. Maysoon, through it all, remains strong for Ahmed and his 7 siblings. She tells me that when she visits him in prison, she always greets him with a smile so as to lift his spirits, but then comes home and crashes, realizing that her son has been robbed of his childhood.
Alhamdulillah, thank God, I try and lift myself from this. My mom tells me you have to stay strong for Ahmed. You have to stay strong, she tells me. I tell my mother, I'm a mother too. She encourages me, my husband as well. They keep me strong for my 7 children and for Ahmed.
After recording this podcast with Maysoon Manasra, we later found out that Ahmed will be having a hearing on the 26th of June. At this hearing, it will be determined whether Ahmed is eligible to be released, given that he's spent 6.5 years out of 9 years in prison. Under Israeli law, normally a person is eligible to be released after being in prison for 2/3 of their sentence. In Ahmed's case, however, there are Israelis who are pushing back and demanding that he serve the full 9-year term. For more information, you can follow the hashtag #FreeAhmedManasra. That's #FreeAhmedManasra. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.
So that's it for us for today. You were listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
FM, Montreal.
So, other than that, I mean, you know, what's going on? What do you say?
Buenas tardes.
And we'll be back.
Missed your favorite show? Not a problem. Go to www.ckut.ca and follow the link to CKUT's easy-to-use archives. Instructions are on the page. 2 months' worth of archives are stored in mono, and a half a month's worth in stereo.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal.
If you're having trouble, please email sys@ckut.ca. That's sys@ckut.ca. Oh,
yeah! I want to be a motivator.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
Stats, prison is a gold mine camp with no buybacks. Nigga, it's a wizard in the system holding all my blacks. It started in 1640, shackles around my ankles. Melanin meant that I can't go to schools or read, cause who's gonna serve my master? Also, the pastor described all my people as the sheep who exist to upkeep the land. We feed the economy, creep all the crops, but then feed on it modestly, consciously knowing you're lesser than. And lighter skin means that you're better now. So you in the house taking whips and probably dick, cause well, you a fetish now. Meanwhile, I'm grateful for all that I'm given. I'm picking this cotton in rhythm. I pray for a lot of the living. Escaping is probably a sin, and if God ever finds out that I want my freedom, well damn, then God's gonna call in the wrath. Two horses with opposite maps. Those nooses, they up in the trees and I'm hanging, but I'll never fall like my pants. Then came the 13th Amendment, written in 1865. It says slavery is over, acceptance, pay for doing crime. And then the things that they made illegal are things you associate with people who now education isn't equal, and they getting paid enough to eat, so we stealing and jugging and shit. We need to be fully equipped. The system the new slave master brought in to stop us and bullying shit. Cause before we were stealing and jugging, the laws we was breaking was loitering. We go to the bin and struggle that these black boys trying to clear, man, we have so much work to do.
Well, you know, Jesus didn't die for us so we could be halfway between two places. He didn't die for us so we could not exactly be a total mess or a failure anymore, but yet never really be victorious either. And a lot of people, I think, get stuck somewhere in the middle. And they've got too much of God to go on, to go back, but not enough of God to go on. And so it's very important to me that I do whatever part I can do with the calling on my life to help people be all the
I'm trying to sell myself and I will do it by myself. I don't trust a soul and I don't need no fucking help. I'm paranoid that everybody's out to try and get me. I'm looking over shoulders as I'm passing through the deli. Maybe it's my skin or maybe it's the way I dress. I'm tearing up my limbs and I won't make it to the next. I'm walking down the street and I'm anticipating death. All because the motherfucker looked at me, I said, I go into the void. Fuck! I go into the void. Fuck! I go into the void. Into the void. Fuck! I go into the back in the danger. No less was passing the strangers. So scared they're acting invasive. Oh dear, they're snatching my face up. Yeah, yeah, I'm happy I made it right under the haste. Hang on my waist, I'm planning to escape. Gradually feed him an ass on the pavement. Panic and greatest the bottom of my face. I'm having a little bit trouble. I saw a man who was sinister and he was bleeding. I thought he was serial, maybe he wasn't. Thought he gonna kill me, the blade in the stomach. The void is a place of the torment. A moment is some of my spirits from her up below us. Darkness of death, corners of corners. Don't say I didn't want you, just say I didn't want you.
I go into the void. I go into the void. Fuck! 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 I go into the...
And so we might say this is an experience of the void. Before trying to explain what this is, and you know the funny thing is it really can't be explained because it has to be felt. Because it's a transformation of one's basic feeling, one's basic consciousness of life.
Thank you.
me like I'm unfamiliar. Acting brand new like you never knew that you liked them thick. I've been carrying this weight in a world beneath these braids, and I'm confused. Would you take the pain that came with all the parts you wanna claim for you? You want my thighs, you want my stride, but not this melanin. You want my hair, but you don't care for this complexion. I'm a black woman. When you told me I wasn't right for you, it wasn't hard to believe, 'cause when I watched TV, I would never see a leading lady look like me. Familiar package with less pigment, I ain't ignorant, it's just reality. You want my thighs, you want my stride, but not this melanin. You want my
just the way it goes.
Just the way it goes. All men should be feminists. Donald Trump was immigrants. I don't want to work it out, so cancel our dream membership. I'ma lead this nigga. Don't believe me, nigga. I was make believing, nigga. It was only one season, nigga. MOD, my nigga. Money up a dick. Money up a dick. You
You should stop breathing, nigga.
You must be the only child, because you're so stingy. I just wanna go fuck wild when you don't defend me. I've been on the fucking prowl. I've been counting minis. You done turn my heart so cold. I should work it free. Darling, darling, I've been praying for you, for you.
I've been praying for you. I've been praying for you. I've been praying. I've been praying for you.
Darling, darling, I've been calling on God for you. No, for you.